It is time for Midday to begin here on the Rural Radio Network. And, of course, we always start with our leadoff hitters at the round table. We got Susan Littlefield and out there in parts unknown. We'll catch up with her in just a second, see where the heck she is. Bob Rogan's here to tell us about news. And Brandon Bennett is here with sports. Susan, where are you?
I tell you, right now I am in Washington, D.C., where, of course, it's always a crazy place to be with lots of things happening. But for our corn growers, it's an opportunity for them to get out and talk to those on the Hill and beyond. So Corn Congress is going on today and tomorrow, so lots of things happening. And lots of things happening for our farm broadcast team as well. We've got a source that coming up at 12:15 that Sean's going to be talking with the folks at BASF, get another crop update with them. And at 12:45, a discussion about imperfect food, part two. It's been a very interesting discussion. Hopefully it's making you rethink as you look at food that's out there. And then we've got coming up at 1:17, Dr. Jason Anderson will be joining from Purdue University as Shirley Peters talks to him. So lots of things happening within the farm team, and, of course, another busy day here in Washington as well.
Is it still raining in Washington, and did they flood there? I know it did on the East Coast some.
Yeah, we did flood yesterday. I was actually going outside to do some recordings and get some pictures that we can use on the website, and the skies opened up, so I came back inside, and we got a flood warning that came across my phone, and so it made things a little interesting for a couple hours yesterday.
I bet so.
No rain right now.
Okay.
Knock on wood.
All right. Well, be safe there. Thank you so much, Susan. Appreciate it. Strangely enough, we stick with the same territory as we go into sports and talk about the All-Star game last night in Washington. I was kind of surprised they were able to get that one off. Good thing they did.
Of all of the games that are being played in Washington right now, the most fun game was last night, and it was kind of round two of the home run derby. Because the actual home run derby, of course, was won by a player for the Washington Nationals. And then last night, a record 10 home runs over the course of the All-Star game that bested the previous record, not by one or two, but by four.
Wow.
The previous home run record in an All-Star game was six, and they hit 10 last night. The American League won that one, which means the American League will have a home field advantage for the next World Series. I still don't agree with that. It's an exhibition game. If it's going to mean nothing, let it mean nothing. But in this case, that's the rules. Of course, I wouldn't have let the 94 All-Star game end in a tie, but that's just me. And local hometown boy is continuing to make good. Ravenna All-Star and UNK standout Connor Baronic signed another contract to continue his pro career. This will be your number three in Spain. 2 years ago, he was second team all Europe. Last year, he was honorable mention all Europe. So Connor Baronic doing very well overseas.
All right, good for him. Connor Baronic, I coached against him, and I think we held him within 30.
That's good.
Bob Brogan, what's going on in the financial markets
today?
Well,
stocks are wavering between gains and losses, which means they're not going anywhere. Also, Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, is for a second day facing questions from lawmakers and a barrage of questions, no less. And I don't like to face a barrage of questions, and I'll bet he doesn't either. And Berkshire Hathaway stock is jumping after a buyback, after buyback rules were eased. So those are the stories we're watching.
All right. Thank you so much, gentlemen. That's all coming up on Midday.
Dewey Nelson on the Rural Radio Network. As we're experiencing a mostly higher market, albeit a small increase in corn and soybean futures, as well as some of the winter wheat, we're joined by Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. Mike, at this stage of the game, there are some factors here that are shaping the markets, but one of which might be somebody by the name of Larry Kudlow.
Yeah, I think the weaker undertone here in the day session, Dewey, has probably been partly due to the director of President Trump's National Economic Council, Mr. Kudlow, talking, and his comments relating to China is especially noteworthy, I think, to not just me, but I think the trade as well. And they kind of suggested that it's really up to China to make the next move, because China was the one that kind of canceled the negotiations out and let that July 6th deadline come and go, and it's not going to be the United States that comes in and helps shift the negotiation process or kicks it into gear. That was also supported by the Secretary of Treasury, who's heading to Argentina for a G20 meeting this weekend, saying he has no scheduled formal talks with China on the sidelines of these meetings in Argentina scheduled at this point. So the weaker undertone, I think, is really where we're at, and there's kind of a dearth of news. We did get some Pakistani soybean sales. That's maybe helping the soy complex a little bit more. But right now, I think most of the people out there are trading weather and maybe watching this U.S. weather as well.
I saw a comment, too, that said that this is a backdoor move by China to purchase our soybeans.
I think that's a possibility. We should know more about that in about a week or so if we can trace back the ships and where those will end up going. Sometimes we can find that out, sometimes we can't. I think the other thing that maybe dovetails with you and I and what we talked about yesterday on the trade news being a little bit more negative was we did see that Japanese EU trade deal signed, and some food products are probably going to be transferred from the United States over to the European Union in terms of getting business from Japan. So I would say, all things being equal, the trade issues are not getting better. They're probably getting a little bit worse, and the trade is very reluctant to come in and buy new long positions, let alone cover short positions, especially given that.
Let's look at this what-if situation. If we do see progress in trade negotiations, what stands to be the big leader in the market?
I think it's still the wheat, because even though we've got some rain chances increasing for the European Union and the Ukraine, it's really going to help the corn more than it will the wheat at this point. And I think there's so much damage has been done, and the USDA did pick up on this on their last report, but I think both technically, seasonally, and fundamentally, I think the wheat is going to be the one that picks up most of the support. And I think this goes back to the currency market, the fact that the Russian ruble is once again down 0.2% against the U.S. dollar. If you take away the trade issues, Dewey, and that was your question, I think you take away the currency issues, and that's really where I think the wheat's got more pent-up buying.
Positive numbers for live and feeder cattle today, Mike.
Yeah, the Fed Cattle Exchange, I think, did give us a positive reaction on the idea of whether packers are short-bought. We saw, a third of the total sold, 142 head, 1 to 9 days, so very short-term. $112 in a key state like Kansas that says, hey, the futures is still $4 behind that, below that roughly in the August live cattle. You've got more futures support than you had 12 hours ago. So that's really helped this market out.
Thanks, Mike. You can get a free 2-week trial subscription to Mike's newsletter by mentioning the Rural Radio Network and go to globalanalytics.biz. Globalanalytics.biz. Our guest, Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics.
Time for us to take a look at ag weather as I'm joined by Paul Perkins, and the folks at the Weather Channel are all a flutter. There's all kinds of, if you turn that on, that's what they're going to talk about this area. Chance for some severe weather anyway today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we do have that potential for some severe weather, especially in central and east Nebraska. The greatest threat for severe weather going to be over north central and northeast Nebraska. Earlier we had some fairly strong showers and thunderstorms originate over west central Nebraska. They're now into north central Kansas. That area of rain shrinking in size right now, down to some light to moderate rain stretching from about Superior to Smith Center and Mankato down to Natoma and Silver Grove. That's moving up towards the southeast.
So that certainly, as you mentioned this earlier, you mentioned this yesterday too, that in the evening it looks like there's chances for rain about every night. Isn't
yeah,
there?
Exactly. It's kind of backed off on that. Today's probably the last great chance of some rain. Otherwise, we're going to see some small chances as we head into the rest of the week and early next week. But right now, we do have temperatures mainly in the mid to upper 70s across the area. Once again, that light rain continuing to fall, but also shrinking coverage as it moves through north central portions of Kansas. Thunderstorms are possible later today and this evening, all thanks to a trough of low pressure moving east across Nebraska and northern Kansas. Some of those storms could be severe. Main threat looks to be some golf ball size hail, wind gusts to 70 and possibly a tornado. Heavy rain in some already saturated areas could lead to some localized flooding because we could see some brief heavy rains with these systems. There is a slight risk of severe storms in central and east Nebraska, basically along and east of a line from Mullen to Lexington and Red Cloud. Otherwise, a greater risk of severe weather is possible with an enhanced risk for areas along and northeast of a line from Ord to Stromsburg and O'Neill, basically north central and northeast Nebraska, that enhanced risk of severe storms, slight risk of severe storms in central and east Nebraska along and east of the line from Mullen to Lexington and Red Cloud. Thunderstorm is expected to wind down as we head towards about midnight. Tomorrow looks to be our warmest day of the next 7 days with a ridge of high pressure building up from the desert southwest. Otherwise, Friday and Saturday look to be dry with some seasonal temperatures as that ridge expands across the plains. Some intermittent thunderstorm chances are back in the forecast for Saturday night into next week. It's going to be mainly dry over the weekend, but it looks like those better chances of some at least small chances of thunderstorms early on next week. In our long-term forecast, the likelihood that temperatures will be cooler than normal for Nebraska and Kansas Monday through the last day of the month. You don't usually hear that very often in the last part of July. Late July daytime highs on average in the upper 80s with average overnight lows in the low to mid 60s. And once again, we're expected to be below that this weekend and Monday on average, the three hottest days of the year. With average daytime highs in central Nebraska right around 88, that means temperatures will slowly start to get cooler as we head through the rest of the year. The last 8 days of July also look to have better rain chances with above normal rainfall expected in both Nebraska and Kansas. Weather factors impacting the markets include showers crossing the Midwest and heavy rain prospects in Russia wheat harvest areas. Hot and dry weather will persist for the rest of the week across the south central U.S. An organized area of rain will spread east from the north and central plains and cross the Midwest before it reaches the Atlantic coast by the end of the week. Showers crossing the Midwest the balance of the week, generally favorable to the crops. Heat and dryness, though, in some western areas has already caused a reduction in corn yield prospects. Southern plains crop areas will be mainly dry and hot through the end of the week with stress to corn, soybeans, also sorghum and hay. In Texas, the topsoil moisture rated 64%, very short to short. Across the northern plains, North Dakota and Minnesota has crops in mostly good to excellent condition with more rain forecast for the end of the week. Montana, though, is drier and hotter, and that is increasing their stress to spring wheat along with the pastures and hay. In the Black Sea region, Russia is in line for moderate to heavy rain over the next week. That rain poorly timed for wheat harvest and will likely result in quality loss and possibly actual crop loss. Russia's wheat crop already projected to be lower than the past two seasons.
Well, it seems like Russia has struggled. Their crops are struggling this year, aren't they?
Yeah, they've had dryness issues, and now they're getting rain when they probably don't need rain, a lot of it, unfortunately, for them. So
darn anyway. Rain always does that, doesn't it? So we'll keep an eye on it for you all day as these conditions, they could be interesting. Could be a weatherman's dream.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be that slight risk of severe storms once again central and east Nebraska and north central and northeast Nebraska, that higher risk of severe storms, especially along and north and east of the line from Ord to once again Stromsburg and Wahoo. So some couple of bullseyes for some severe weather across the area for today.
All right, if you're out there, you want to check on your local conditions, current forecast, where can you go? Anytime.
You can go to krvn.com.
All right, thank you, Paul.
Dewey Nelson with a market update on the World Radio Network. And here in the midday, well, we're still seeing slight rally in corn and soybeans and some months of winter wheat futures. September corn is at 347 and a quarter, December 360 and three quarters. They're both up one. August soybeans, 841, up 1.5. September, 846 and three quarters, up 1.75. November, 856 and three quarters, up 1.5. Now, Chicago September wheat is down three quarters at 496, make that 497, while December's up three quarters at 513. Kansas City September, 490.5, down a quarter. December, 515.5, up a half. Minneapolis September wheat, 531 and a quarter, down two. The rally continues in live and feeder cattle, triple-digit gains. August live cattle, 108.82, up 240. October, 110.37, up 187. December, 113.97, up 135. February, 117.85, up 145. And April at 118.92, up 122. August feeder cattle, 154.37. That's up 310. September, 154.52, up 282. October, 154.57, up 257. November, 154.02, up 212. January, 152.15, up 182. Lean hogs are seeing some more selling. August at 67.30, down 60. October, 51.37, down 82. December, 46.90, down 57. The Dow is still up 72 at 25,191. But the NASDAQ, two lower at 7,853. The S&P 500 up four at 2,815.
Hey guys, it's Shaylee, and we are excited once again this year to be bringing you Fridays in the Field. Every Friday, we'll make our way from the northeast part of the state.
Hi, this is Susan Littlefield. I'm headed just south of Columbus to Bellwood, and Bruce Schmidt. Bruce will keep us up to date on how the crops are growing, not only in his plots, but in the field.
And then travel a little further southwest into central Nebraska.
Hi, this is Clay Patton, and this year's Friday in the Field takes us to Dawson County, where I'm talking with Bart Beattie as he takes us through his fields in the 2018 growing year.
And finally, make our way to the Panhandle to really showcase the diversity in Nebraska crops.
Hello from western Nebraska. I'm Chabela Guzman, and join me on Fridays over the next few months as we talk with farmer Chris Cullen in Hemmingford about everything from wheat to sugar beets and more.
You won't want to miss a minute of our Fridays in the Field coverage for 2018. Keep up with all of our audio and video by liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter, and visiting ruralradio.com.
Mexico and Canada want to wrap up the renegotiation of the North American Free Trade Agreement this year. That according to the Hagstrom Report. Good afternoon, I'm Alex Wojcicki joining you on the Rural Radio Network with a midday update of your agriculture news. Well, in Washington, D.C. this week, the Mexican ambassador to the United States says the incoming Mexican president wants NAFTA to be, quote, completed before he takes office on December 1st. An official from Canada said the nation would welcome completion of the agreement this year. The talks, however, appear to stall and avoid highly contentious issues while missing tentative deadlines repeatedly. For agriculture, Canada maintains that any proposed changes to Canada's dairy supply management system are, quote, unacceptable. Canada points out it is the second largest export market for U.S. dairy products after Mexico, and that the products enter Canada duty-free. Well, JBS USA, the U.S. branch of the world's largest meat producer, says it has suspended shipments from a Kentucky pig farm where workers were shown hitting, kicking, and throwing pigs on undercover video. The Colorado-based company said it made its decision based on an initial review of the Mercy for Animals video at Tosh Farm site in Simpson County, Kentucky, and will investigate the allegations. Tennessee-based Tosh Farms says several actions shown in the video violate its policy and will retrain its staff immediately. It says a veterinarian found no problems at the site Tuesday. At the National Corn Growers Association's biannual Corn Congress event, Deb Gangwish was elected to serve on NCGA's Corn Board. Deb is a farmer from Shelton and is director for the Nebraska Corn Growers Association. She said, quote, I am humbled and honored to have been selected to serve in this role. I'm excited to hit the ground running in October and serve the corn farmers by working to improve issues such as the RFS, trade, and the farm bill. She continued saying, so many of the groups driving and creating policy are unfamiliar with modern agriculture. I look forward to bridging the gap to ensure agriculture is a viable industry for the generations to come. On their farm, Deb and her husband grow seed corn, field corn, soybeans, grain sorghum, oats, alfalfa, hay, and corn silage. In addition, they background cattle and own a trucking company. Also in the news, the Food and Drug Administration is expected to soon enforce regulations that define milk as an animal product, not a plant-based food. FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb told an audience at a Politico Pro summit this week that the agency will soon seek public input on enforcing the existing regulations on dairy labeling standards. The potential action, long sought by the National Milk Producers Federation, should stop the labeling of imitation products from using dairy terms.
We are very encouraged that FDA Commissioner Gottlieb admitted, first of all, that you don't got milk if it comes from a nut or a seed or a grain, and more importantly, that he is going to begin taking the appropriate steps to make sure that they enforce that definition so that we don't see milk on products that are not from a dairy animal.
By definition, under existing FDA standards, milk or dairy products must come from lactating animals.
And finally, later this afternoon, Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts and Nebraska Department of Agriculture staff will welcome Furnace County as Nebraska's new livestock-friendly county. That's been a check of your midday agriculture news from the Nebraska Soybean Board News Desk, which is brought to you in part by Nebraska soybean farmers and their checkoff. On the Rural Radio Network, I'm Alex Wojcicki. For the Rural Radio Network, I'm Shaylee Peters, and it's Wednesday, which means we're back this week with BASF, and this week visiting with Technical Service Representative Brady Kapler. Brady, we had a chance to talk to you last week, and we took a look at some plant health applications in corn. Well, we're shifting gears a little bit this week and looking at plant health applications in soybeans.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as we look at soybeans, they're, you know, just as important as what we talked about last week with corn. And we really want to, you know, consider and take advantage of the benefits of a plant health education application in soybeans. And so when we look at that, I mean, not only are we back to the same things of obviously disease control anytime we have fungicides, but also the other factors that come into play with that, you know, whether it be our stress tolerance or growth efficiency, those things are all important. And, of course, those are going to, back to just like we talked with corn, inevitably those are going to lead to our yield potential.
So start to break down what exactly you're talking about when you mention plant health applications, specifically in soybeans. You mentioned yield potential there, and you talk about diseases, stress tolerance, all of those things. What does that look like, Brady?
Well, you know, first we probably should talk a little bit about timing, and that is that, you know, with corn, we're looking in the, starting at the tassel time and going somewhere in the R2, R3 stages being ideal. With soybeans, the ideal timing that we're looking at is more R3, R4, and that's when we're just starting to get those small pods in the top few nodes of the plant. And so that timing is, again, it's that time when stress is impacting the plant the most. And so if we're able to protect that plant during those important reproductive standpoints, and then also keep the stress low, that allows us to pick out our highest yield potential. And that's done through not only controlling diseases, but as I mentioned earlier, we reduce stress. And then we also improve growth efficiency, whether it be through photosynthesis or other ways. We're able to get that plant to being as healthy as it can be when it's starting to enter that period where it can really make the difference in the yield.
And we talk about all of this plant health application, Brady, but maybe go into the specifics of some of the tools you guys have in your toolbox.
Sure. Well, our lead product for soybeans is going to be Preaxor. And so that has been one that we developed really kind of specifically for soybeans. We use it some in corn too as well, but really the shining star of that is going to be soybeans for that. And so Preaxor at 4 ounces in that R3, R4 time frame is an ideal solution for, again, keeping those things that we're looking at to protect our yield, whether it be diseases, stress, or growth efficiency.
And then finally, maybe just give us an update on what you're seeing out in the fields as you get out and scout, maybe some of the producers and their concerns or what they're seeing in their fields.
Well, we're hearing that the soybean crop is looking wrong. It started out a little bit rough, and we had different weather and those type of things that impacted it. And so, you know, the crop can definitely benefit from this application, but it's getting better as we go along. And, you know, still for a lot of us, the old adage of beans are made in August is going to be a crucial thing here. Crop is maybe slightly ahead of where it has been as a general rule. I mean, we're seeing some applications that may be starting this week, but they'll continue into early August too, is depending on when the beans were planted and stuff like that. But things look really good out there from that standpoint, and it seems to be getting better as we go along.
It's Brady Kapler, BASF Technical Service Representative, visiting with us this week about plant health applications in soybeans, what exactly that means, some of the things they're doing to put that into place. Tune in every Wednesday right here on the Rural Radio Network to get updates from BASF. I'm Shaylee Peters, and you're listening to the Rural Radio Network.
Time for us to take a look at sports. Here comes Brandon.
Good afternoon, Scott. Last night, the American League won the home run derby that really counts. The AL crushed 5 home runs and outlasting the National League 8-6 in 10 innings at Washington. It's a 6th straight win for the junior circuit, which now leads the all-time series 44, 43, and 2. The game's first 12 runs were all scored on homers. Yankees outfielder Aaron Judge and Angels outfielder Mike Trout got the home run party started, providing solo shots to put the AL ahead 2-0. The senior circuit counter with solo shots by Cubs catcher Wilson Contreras and Rockies shortstop Trevor Story, and then Astros teammates Alex Bregman and George Springer homered to open up the 10th, one inning after Reds utility man Scooter Jeanette tied it with a two-run blast in the 9th. Indians outfielder Michael Brantley added a sacrifice fly to cap the AL's 10th inning rally. The previous record for home runs in an All-Star game was 6. Last night, both teams hit 10. Well, in Europe, the LEB Silver team based out of Murcia, Spain, has landed Ravenna native and former UNK standout forward Connor Baranek. He played most recently at the Horsham 79ers in the Danish Basketball League, where in 23 games he averaged 14 points, 5.8 rebounds, and 2.5 assists per game last season, and was selected to the Eurobasket.com All-Danish Honorable Mention and League Player of the Week. The season before, Baranek played at Fordesto Carrefour, where in 34 games, he was the fifth best scorer in the league with 16.1 points, 7.6 rebounds per game, also good for fifth in the league, and 1.6 assists per game. As a result, 2 years ago, he was selected to the Eurobasket.com All-Spanish LEB Silver Second Team and League Player of the Week twice. Baranek graduated from UNK in 2016, and he'll be entering his third season in pro basketball. Two people familiar with the situation say San Antonio and Toronto have reached an agreement in principle on a trade that will send Kawhi Leonard to the Raptors and DeMar DeRozan to the Spurs. One of the people say the Spurs are already sending Danny Green to the Raptors as part of the deal, and both people spoke to the AP on condition of anonymity because the deal has not yet been finalized. Golden State Warriors coach has received a contract extension following the franchise's repeat championship and third title in 4 years during his tenure. Details of the extension have not yet been announced. Kerr had 1 year remaining on his original $25 million five-year contract. And the Division I college football playoff is sticking with four teams, at least for now. Bill Hancock, the executive director of the college football playoff, says there had been no talk about expanding this event. He commented at the SEC Media Days yesterday, "This season's national championship game will be played on January the 7th, 2019 in Santa Clara, California. The semifinals will be held on December 29th at the Cotton Bowl and the Orange Bowl, respectively." That's a look at sports. Stay tuned. More of Midday is straight ahead. You're listening to the Rural Radio Network.
There is a chance of thunderstorms through the night tonight in central and eastern Nebraska. Some of those storms could be severe, so stay tuned to KRVN for the latest in weather information. I'm Dave Schroeder. An Omaha company says Russian hackers didn't breach its election machines or software in 2016. Kathy Rogers is an executive with Omaha-based election systems and software, which supplies voting systems for U.S. elections. She tells the Omaha World Herald that the company worked with the FBI to verify its systems weren't hacked after 12 Russian government intelligence officers were indicted. Deputy U.S. Attorney General Rod Rosenstein announced last week the indictment of Russian officials on charges of hacking into U.S. election-related computer systems 2 years ago. The indictments allege the officials hacked into computers of an unidentified company that supplied software verifying voter registration information. Rogers says the Department of Homeland Security confirmed that none of the company's information was breached. The company is the largest U.S. maker of voter machines. North Platte police are looking for an armed subject who robbed a local Quick Stop convenience store in the early hours yesterday. At about 2:30 in the morning, a clerk at the store on Rodeo Road reported that a man entered the store and pointed a gun at him and ordered him to take all the money out of the register. The suspect ordered the clerk to the back of the store and fled out of the front, taking just over $200 in cash. Officers responded, but the suspect had already fled. A witness said the suspect took off in a dark-colored sedan. Police have posted a video. It's on our Facebook page at KRVN.com under Regional News. A former Nebraska tax commissioner has been named a vice chancellor at the University of Nebraska at Omaha and University of Nebraska Medical Center. Doug Ewald will oversee business, finance, and business development for both Omaha campuses. He has nearly 30 years of administrative experience at companies, including Union Pacific. He served as state tax commissioner from 2006 through 2013. Ewald attended the University of Nebraska at Omaha and holds a master's in public administration. Current ag and news coverage at your fingertips. Click podcasts and videos right under Listen Live at KRVN.com. Reporting from the KRVN News Center, I'm Dave Schroeder.
Good afternoon again on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Clay Patton. Yesterday we talked about a company that's helping producers who may not be able to sell some of their produce into a retail chain due to its cosmetic or its general appearance. Today we learn more about that company and the business model behind it. Joining us to talk about this is Riley Brock, content manager for the company In Perfect Produce. And Riley, talk to us about the business model behind In Perfect Produce that helps it sell ugly produce.
Yeah, absolutely. We're a subscription box delivery service. So we'll bring you a box of delicious, healthy fruits and veggies every week or every other week. You know, you get to choose what works for your lifestyle, and you get to pick what goes in all the boxes. So obviously, we're sourcing from farms near you as much as possible. So we're following the seasons, and we're also kind of following the fluctuations of the produce market and finding stuff that might otherwise go to waste, whether that's surplus or it looks a little bit different. So we'll build a default box for you every week, but then you get to log into your account and you get to pick your favorites and what you really are excited to get. So whether that's you love beets and you want to stock up for you're making pickles, you're having a big dinner party, or maybe you don't care for beets. So you take the beets out of your box, but you stock up on apples or leeks or berries or whatever it is you're passionate about. You know, we want our boxes to fit into your life. So they're all customizable. They come in a wide range of sizes. You can get fruits, veggies, or both, and we offer organic or conventional produce as well. So we like to keep it pretty open-ended so folks can really, you know, do what works for them and fits in their lifestyle. And yeah, people love getting the box delivered every week. We hear a lot of feedback that it kind of feels like you're on one of those cooking shows like Chopped. You know, the challenge every week is kind of part of the draw. Like you get to pick what goes in it, but you also kind of get to keep yourself on your toes, you know, maybe try a vegetable you've never tried before. And just, you know, get more creative in the kitchen and have fun and cook more.
In Perfect Produce is not a fly-by-night type operations. Riley, talk to us about how long you've been in business and the way In Perfect Produce has grown in its business.
Almost 3 years now. We're coming up on our third birthday this August. So, yeah, we're, I guess, a teenage company now, just coming out of our infancy and really getting our legs. But we're in 7 cities now, so we've grown a lot since when we first started. We were just, you know, in the Bay Area back then, and now we're all across the country and growing fast.
Part of this recent growth of Imperfect Produce, Riley, has been a partnership with a Wisconsin food co-op. Talk to us more about that partnership.
Yeah, we're really excited to be working with the Wisconsin Food Hub co-op. We got put in touch a couple years ago. You know, the produce industry is really relationship-based, so one of our organic buyers had worked with a woman from the Wisconsin Food Hub Cooperative before, and they got in touch, and very quickly we recognized, both sides recognized really the benefit of working with each other. We form a symbiotic relationship where the Food Hub Cooperative, which has dozens of members all across Wisconsin and beyond, they're hardworking farms, a lot of them kind of smaller farms or family farms, and so for them, again, anytime they can't sell produce because of how it looks, that really threatens their bottom line. We were talking with a cucumber grower, for example, and they let us know that they used to sell to canneries. The cannery market had left Wisconsin, and as a result, they had 25-30% of their crop that they couldn't find a home for. And so that's where we came in, and through the partnership with the Food Hub Cooperative, said, hey, like, we want to buy this from you for a fair market price. We want to help support you and help you find a home for these curvy cucumbers, because, you know, we know that our customers don't care that a cucumber has curves. They just care that it tastes great and it's healthy and delicious. And so we're really able to help support hardworking farmers all across Wisconsin through this partnership. And it's a really awesome collaboration. We're really excited about it.
Riley, where Imperfect Produce is so spread out across the country, how much do you rely on technology to check all of your produce, or is it more still the human hand, the human eye checking over all your produce?
You know, a lot of it is really people looking at it by hand. We don't have really fancy machines that are checking for quality. Sorry, there's a truck driving by me right now. We don't really have fancy machines that are checking for quality on our end. You know, I think a lot of our growers do have, you know, machine and tech-based sorting. But really for us, it's just, you know, hardworking folks making sure that anything we're getting and sorting through is up to spec, right, for us, that it's not moldy or bruised or old or damaged. And so, yeah, we have a lot of keen eyes in our warehouse that are constantly going through and making sure that everything we're shipping out to customers is perfectly awesome and, you know, only quirky in appearance, not in quality standards.
Riley, final question. For folks that want to know more, they've listened to our interview, where can they go to find out more information about Imperfect Produce and your business model?
Yeah, definitely head to our website. That's www.imperfectproduce.com. So if you head there, if you're looking to get a box, you can see if we're in your city and your neighborhood yet. You can just head to the website and enter your zip code. If you're looking to get in touch with us, we have a contact page as well, whether that's you're just looking to learn more about what you're doing, how you can get involved. But also if you're a grower out there listening thing and you know that you have stuff that currently can't find a great home, like, we'd love to help you find a home for it, because, you know, all produce deserves to be eaten. You know, we love all our children. That's something we hear from a lot of growers, that they just really want to see it find a good home. So we're here to do that as well.
That again, Riley Baronk, content manager for Imperfect Produce. If you would like to hear the first half of our conversation, visit ruralradio.com. When you want the latest in ag news and information, plus things on the leading edge of agriculture, you can find it on the Rural Radio Network.
Kelly Sales and Service in Elm Creek is your stock full-line triple C dealer. Hydrobeds are the most multifunctional bale handler for all livestock producers. Their ruggedness works with any attachment, such as the dump box, postal digger, or wire winder. You can even operate your squeeze chute. Hydrobeds operate with the reliable cable controls or are now available with a wireless remote. Kelly's has your bale bed in stock. Come see them at Kelly Sales and Ag Service of Elm Creek at 308-856-4900.
With a market report on the Rural Radio Network. Shortly before the close today, we're slightly higher in corn and soybeans mixed in the wheat futures. September corn, 347.5, up 1.25. December, 361.5, up 1.75. March, 373, up 1.25. August soybeans, 842.25. September, 847.75, both up 2.75. November, 857.75, up 2.5. Chicago September wheat, 496, down 1.75. December 512, down 0.25. Kansas City September, 489.5, down 1.25. December 514.75, down 0.25. Minneapolis September, 529.75. December 547.5, both down 3.5. Big rally for live and feeder cattle with triple digit gains. Lean hogs lower in the nearbys. August live cattle settled 108.95, up 2.52. October 110.65, up 2.15. December 114.20, up 1.57. February 118.12, up 1.72. August feeder cattle settled 154.45, up 3.17. September 154.65, up 2.95. October 154.72, up 2.72. November 154.27, up 2.37. August hogs 67.20, down 70. October 51.92, down 27. December 47.02, down 45. Wall Street, the Dow up 62 at 25,182. NASDAQ unchanged at 7,854. The S&P 500 up 3 at 2,814.
Folks here on the plains are known for being independent, strong, and tough. Common sense is also an attribute.
The smartest thing one can do is knowing when to seek help.
The Nebraska Rural Response Hotline, in cooperation with Interchurch Ministries of Nebraska, Legal Aid of Nebraska, and the Rural Response Council, has helped thousands of hardworking men and women since the 1980s.
If you're feeling overwhelmed or depressed, help is just a phone call away. 800-464-0258.
In addition to mental health and addiction counseling, the Rural Response Hotline can provide information on legal assistance, financial clinics, mediation, and emergency assistance.
And of course, it's confidential.
The Rural Response Hotline, standing by to help independent, strong, and tough people like you.
800-464-0258.
800-464-0258. You can also find a link at ruralradio.com.
The Rural Response Hotline. It's okay to ask for help.
Back on the Rural Radio Network, and we get a review of the livestock futures trade from Joe Teal at Great Plains Commodities. Joe.
Yeah, pretty good day in the cattle market. Triple-digit gains through the live cattle and the feeder cattle. And it's hard to put a pretty good finger on this, on why we did break through some resistance early this morning. I think a lot of it was based on the fact that we're still discount to the cash trades, and what cash has traded this week, which hasn't been much, started out a little bit lower, and then now we saw a little bit higher yesterday, and appears that a lot of talk about the Packers maybe be a little short bought, so that really created a pretty good short covering and renewed buying interest in the cattle market. Once again, not really in the hogs. They're going to finish mixed, the front end a little lower and the back end a little higher. The a lot of bear spreading with that, and the cash weak again, and the cutout sharply lower. So there wasn't much good news to put into the hogs, whereas in the cattle, the cutouts were higher, and that also helped. So kind of a mixed bag today. Now, the cattle do have a cattle on feed report on Friday and an inventory report, so things might quiet down going into that report unless the Packers step up with higher prices.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Teal, Great Plains Commodities. Total cattle slaughter the first 3 days this week estimated at 355,000, 4,000 less than a week ago, 12,000 more than a year ago. Hog slaughter, 1,353,000, 4,000 less than last week. You're listening to the Rural Radio Network.
Peter is joining you from the Agricultural, Economic, and Technology Summit hosted by the Farm Bureau happening in Kearney. And I get to chat now with our keynote, Dr. Jason Henderson. He is with Purdue University, the Ag and Director of Purdue Extension. And Jason covered so much good information today. I'll have you just kind of jump in. You took a little bit of a closer look at trade, and not only trade, but maybe some markets that aren't China.
Yes, I think some of the things that's happening in trade, it obviously comes down to policy shifts and the tariffs. So I think when we look at it, we got to think about a future trade of our opportunities in it. And I always looked at it in terms of people and their growth and the incomes. And if you look at it in terms of economic growth, it's the leaders going forward over probably the next few years and decade is going to be India and Latin America. And so these are places that are emerging and developing countries. They're going to have a burgeoning middle class population, hopefully, with the growth that goes forward there. And U.S. agriculture has to figure out a way of how do we get our products into those markets.
You talked about that. One thing you touched on, which was interesting to me, was you mentioned amid today's trade climate that sometimes when those supply chains are cut or don't exist anymore, it's very hard to go back. So maybe even more of a reason to look into these other markets.
It is. I think one of the things that we have in agriculture is the emergence of supply chains of how it goes from farm to table. It goes through many different hands and through that value chain. And once you get trade disruptions and they switch that whole supply chain, it's a barrier to get it back. And so I think we have to focus on making sure that agriculture is the supplier of first choice and making sure that we're not the supplier of last choice. That's going to take building relationships and working within these supply chains from both the company's perspective, but also from a governmental perspective in many of these different nations.
When we talk about the world market and the world consumer as well, one thing that you had mentioned was, are we trying to Americanize them, or do we maybe need to focus on what they are doing in their countries?
Yes, I think one of the things that we've done over the past few decades is really trying to convert them into the American diet, the last aspect of it. I mean, yes, they're going to be increasing their protein consumption with higher incomes, and that's just a natural transition mechanism. But what type of proteins are they going to consume? Are there some that are natural to their culture and heritage? Well, if that's the case, then maybe we need to think about how do we start supplying some of those products instead of trying to supply the American type of protein. A little different perspective, but it might add additional value to what we're producing in American agriculture.
As we march into the next 10 years, and it's hard to put in a nutshell, but what are you telling producers? What are you telling ag businesses across the board?
My message is basically, I think there's going to be two types of agriculture that emerge over the next decade, and it's either commodity-based or value-added-based, and you have to figure out which one that you want to play in. If you want to be a commodity-based producer, in a commodity market, low-cost producers win, and you have to drive efficiency. You have to be making sure that you know what your costs are, market it appropriately when the market turns, and taking advantage of those price spikes of what happens over the next decade. On the flip side, you can think about looking at a value-added type of agricultural business, but it's a completely different model. You're not necessarily going to be the low-cost producer. Your goal is to extract high value. So you have to know your customer better than anybody else knows so that you can deliver a product that they're willing to pay more for. So you have to become even more closer to the consumer and working with ways to deliver individualized products that people really want to experience and enjoy in addition to just consume.
It's Dr. Jason Henderson with Purdue University from the Agricultural Economic and Technology Summit happening in Kearney. I'm Shaley Peters on the Rural Radio Network.
Dewey Nelson on the Rural Radio Network. We had a slight rally, slightly higher in corn and soybeans today, but a little sell-off in the wheat trade. With us is John Payne, Senior Marketing Analyst with Daniels Ag Marketing in Chicago and publisher of the newsletter This Week in Grain. What's your thought on the corn market today?
I think the fact we didn't trade down is a good sign. Breaking above 360, I thought maybe brought about some short covering the last couple of days. And I would have been depressed is the wrong word, but just a little bit down on the markets to think maybe we pull back to 355. But we didn't do it today. December, solidly above 360 now into the close. And tomorrow will be exports. And I think that's going to be good news now going forward. Exports and then Monday's crop progress report, which I think could show another downgrade of the crop. Things are still very rosy out there on the corn side, but how rosy is now kind of how much is baked in? Are we looking at a 180 plus yield or below 180? I really think it makes a difference. If we're closer to 175, this is a really bullish market in the short term. If it's above 180, I think it's a little more bullish of a market down the road, regardless of what goes on in the short term.
Did we sustain a move above yesterday's session highs? Was that possible?
Yeah, we did. Another move up in beans and just incredibly quiet. I think that would be the surprise. Just traded on like a two tick average right around 857.5 and never really moved mid-morning. So I don't know if we're setting up for something tomorrow or if we're just kind of biding time here. I think the market was a little disappointed that Chief Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow was speaking this morning and mentioned that they're not expecting any deal anytime soon. They're waiting for the Chinese essentially to respond with the demands the U.S. has as far as IP restrictions and if that would change, I think that the U.S. would drop their tariffs. And if that's the case, then I think beans are probably $2.50 too cheap. So you have a lot of guys here. We're seeing buyers come in, wanting to buy call options, wanting to buy the board. I think you've got to be careful because in reality, time is not your friend. And if you have, markets trade sideways here, I think we'll probably drift lower, staying 25% below where the Brazilian offers are. Right now we're about 23%, so I don't think there's a whole lot of downside here unless the Brazilian market would fall out of bed. And right now demand is on fire down there, so I think that as they rally, we'll rally. The question is just how high. I'd like to think maybe we could see $9 even with the tariffs on.
And a little quick question for you. Are the buyers a little nervous about building long positions?
Well, they're already long in wheat. They're really not in corn and beans. So if you're looking to kind of play the fade, that would be buy beans, sell corn, buy beans, sell wheat, buy corn, sell wheat. But at this point, wheat is where the bullish story is.
All right. John Payne, Senior Marketing Analyst with Daniels Ag Marketing in Chicago. Remember to go to the website, danielsagmarketing.com. You're listening to the Rural Radio Network.